Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Within football, we have silos.
You even talk about hiring the man first, the coach second. I think he is an unbelievable person.
Every single person in this locker room right now is playing professional football.
Aaron get COVID, and the week they're like, yeah, you starting. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Looking back to Green Bay, I made a lot of long-lasting relationships there. You know, I got nothing but love for the city.
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Giannis. Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers Podcast, the one Packers podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd. Boys,
hello, hello.
Greetings, gentlemen.
And football is back, kind of, sort of. It is the Hall of Fame game today. Congrats, Sterling Sharp. We've talked about him too many times already this offseason, once when he was, you know, finally elected in and everything else. So that's very cool. But training camp has started. Football is going on. There's actual things to talk about. We recorded like a month ago, and I didn't realize how long the break was between, because I'm like, oh, finally, we're getting close to football. And it's like, oh, wait, no, we actually have four more weeks of darkness. But now it's getting to that point where I think people are getting a little sick of summer, looking forward to football starting up.
Sick of summer? Like, I want it to be cold?
That's the best part of being a football fan living in the Midwest, and I've probably said this multiple times, is once the weather gets shittier, it's like, well, it's going to be winter, but we have football to watch every Sunday. So it's like you lose one thing, but you gain something else. And then February happens, and then you want to kill yourself.
As a bit of a baseball fan living here in the Twin Cities and a Twins fan at that, I'm officially ready for football season after the team traded away like half of the team and burned the stadium to the ground today. So let's get into football.
Didn't they just lose like 13-1 to the Sox?
Something like that, yeah.
The Red Sox.
Mm. Yes, yeah, very.
Multiple Sox.
Very important. Hey, well, at least the Brewers are good. You're like a half-assed Brewers fan too, aren't you?
Yes, very true. I was just okay. Just in Milwaukee last week.
Yeah, how are you saying you're a Twins fan and you were in Milwaukee last week for the fan or the throwback home run derby all-star game, whatever they had?
I mean, they play in different leagues, so I can completely root for both teams. I know they're never going to meet each other in the playoffs because the Twins don't win anything in the postseason.
Very fair. With that, before we get into the real talk, obviously Mark Murphy retired. We'll talk about that at the end because I'm sure it's become grating at this point when I'm talking or bitching about him all the time. But a little fun thing at the beginning, the Packers revealed, one, the new locker rooms, which are pretty sweet, and the new helmets. Billy, I'll let you go first. What are the two do you find more interesting?
Personally, I think the helmets are much more interesting, like just the effect that they have to look like a leather helmet. And I think, you know, I just think back to, what was it, 2013, when we had the blue throwbacks with the yellow circle,
yeah,
with
even,
the numbers.
Yeah, I think even like 2010 we started.
We had that terrible shit brown helmet. Like, just to go from that to this is night and day. Like, it's actually going to look like a legitimate throwback.
Yeah, and even those jerseys, if they just had this helmet, I think would be like a full letter grade higher. Because I thought those jerseys were fine back then, but yeah, the brown helmet. Well, I thought it looked worse with the yellow helmet personally, but with the tan pants too. It seems like that's like the least revered throwback we've had in recent memory. Maybe in the late 90s, that dark blue, yellow, solid up top. On the shoulders, those were pretty bad. I think they wore that at in Milwaukee, but I don't know. I like the helmets. You see that people were complaining or saying that we were just copying Illinois because that's what they did last year in college. And it's like, they're like, oh, they stole the whole thing. It's like, well, both these jerseys are from the fucking 50s. It's like there isn't really, it's not like there was extravagant different designs of these jerseys back then. And it's like, how different is a leather helmet going to look?
Well, exactly. Everybody wore a leather helmet back in the day. So.
No, only Illinois. Yeah, they're right. The only ones. Yeah. Everyone else wore modern shut helmets.
I think the worst throwback uniforms we ever had, it was a game we played in Thanksgiving with Favre and Amon Green.
Yeah, that's
it was
right.
Like the creamed corn yellow pants with the white jerseys. Like those were awful.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's like the away version of the yellow and blue one that I'm thinking of. Todd, since we talked about the helmets there, what did you think of the locker room?
I like the locker room. I'm like a little bit torn between like football should be gritty and like the locker rooms aren't gritty at all. Like the way they have like the display case for the helmet, but it looks like you'll never go backwards, right? Like they'll never be gritty. It'll never happen again. So it's like, I mean, they're really cool looking, like the way they display. I think they even like the top opens like side to side, like opens up and the shoulder pads sit there. I don't know. Maybe that's not what anybody will actually do with their shoulder pads because that seems like a lot of work. But the reveal was cool. I think they had some pictures of, like, the bathroom too. I mean, it's like if you're going to go to a facility of an NFL team, like that's what it should look like. It should be beautiful, right? Like it, I don't know. That was my thought. It's like it's not that the old ones were ugly, but I don't know. It was very nice. They did a good job.
I'm watching the receiver documentary on Netflix, and I don't remember, it might be the Vikings locker room, but I saw like the Vikings lockers in the documentary, and then seeing what the Packers have now, it's like they look very similar to me. So it's like, what did Green Bay have before, and did they kind of realize, oh, we need to kind of keep up with the Joneses here and make it comfortable for these players in a place where they actually want to hang out?
Yeah, they're.
You know what the old locker room kind of looked like? Did you guys have Well, Spencer maybe would have been. River Falls used to be where the Pack. Actually, that was where the Chiefs.
Yes. Yeah.
Had their.
Yep.
They weren't quite as nice, but it had like the same vibe as like River Falls locker room, which was literally just a temporary space for the Chiefs in the summer. Like obviously that was where they just had their training camp, and like that's what the Packers' old lockers used to look like. So they definitely needed to be upgraded. Because when were the Chiefs there? Like, oh, I don't know, 30 years ago?
No, I think
40 years ago?
No, I think it was more recent than that. I would say, I think even in the
2000s?
In the 2000s they were there.
I remember going to the Chiefs training camp in like the early 2000s.
Okay, so less than 30 years ago. So I guess it's, I don't know. They needed an upgrade though.
Yeah, it's one of those where you were saying, you know, a gritty locker room. I don't know what you mean by that. Just like the wire mesh. Like,
I don't even know.
The pink visiting locker room at Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City.
Yeah.
I like look at it and I'm like, it's too well lit. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't, you know, it's too well lit. The lockers should be metal, right? Like they should bang when you hit on them, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. I'd like to survey NFL players and see how many agree with you. Probably
none of them.
Close to
not
none.
A single one. Yeah. There's not maybe some of the really old coaches would agree with me.
Right.
Like who was the
Rich Bisaccia
who was
would
the
agree with you.
Really the really fat coach from Hard Knocks the one
year that with a mustache and his belly would move. Yeah,
he agrees. He agrees with me.
Yeah, he's probably dead with a heart attack by now, so I don't know if
maybe.
Yeah, because
what is the locker room going to look like after a November game where it's rainy and muddy and wet and you have these players coming in their muddy uniforms and cleats and everything, and then they sit at these nice lockers?
That's what I mean. You need a concrete floor for that aesthetic, right? Like it needs to be like a dirty, muddy concrete floor when you come in from like
But I doubt that's what it was before. I don't think it was concrete.
Wasn't.
Yeah.
It was never.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. It wasn't gritty, but it was just so outdated that we see these, you know, the player surveys at the end of the year now, and the Packers, I believe the lowest grade that they had was the locker room. So that's one of the reasons why they did it. And I think they renovated it probably back when they did Lambeau in like 2004, 2005, whatever. But that's the thing too, because and that's, you know, it's like the Vikings locker room, like you said, it's like how many different companies are out there that actually do this type of work. It's like every college, every decent D1 college has a locker room like this now, just for recruiting and everything. But like watching the kind of tour of it too, I thought it was so funny because it's like a little transformer booth where it's like all of a sudden you flip this up, you flip this down, and you got this. If you haven't seen that one, Todd, you should look at that because it's funny too. It's like, oh, and then you open this and you put your shoulder pads here and there's an air dryer. And then you pull this down here, you put your helmet here and there's an air dryer. And then you open this here, you put your shoes here and there's an air dryer. It's like everywhere. It's like there's another fucking, I'm like, what kind of like power supply do they need in the locker room now? Because it's like every freaking locker has got like four dryers in it. And I was looking at it too because it's so compact and the way it moves around. I'm like, where do they? Because you always see the pictures of the game day jerseys, and at the very end, the guy's like, "Oh, and then you flip this over, and here's the hook to display the game day jerseys." I'm like, "This is nuts."
I have a question though. So, what do you do when you have a 90-man roster in training camp? What do you do with those guys?
I don't know what they do now. I think they renovated the previous locker room. So it's that same space, because what they had was the Green Mile room is what they called it, which is just like a more standard hallway with wooden lockers. So I don't know, that is a very good question. I'm curious if they renovated that as well, because, you know, they just use it obviously during the summer and then no one really needs it after that. So I would assume maybe they just revamped that a little bit. But yeah, that's a good question.
Did you also see that there's screens above everyone's? Like, one of the pictures that I saw had, like,
oh, yeah,
Jordan Love's face with his number. Like, it actually opens up a really cool opportunity to cut someone. Like, you just put, like, a big red X over their locker, and then it's like you walk in the locker and you're like, fuck. Or, right, it says, over above the locker, it says, grab your playbook and go see coach.
Or somebody comes back from practice and the screen is just dark. It's completely empty. Like, oh.
Or it has the backup's name there, so that it's like they come out of the hallway and then like their pads get put in there and you're like, fuck.
You get AI to take their headshot picture and make it a frowny face instead of the happy smiling one that they have. Yeah, because, and again, I'm a loser. What the other things, it's like, you know, you see the interviews now and stuff, and you're like, oh man, I'm never going to see that old locker room again. You know, I've just been so used to, as long as I've really been a fan of seeing pictures and interviews and videos or whatever from that locker room, and it's going to be, you know, take some getting used to now with the new one. But also, like you're talking about there, I'm like, you know, I'm still kind of a throwback guy where it's like, I wish there was paper tickets and everything. It's like, God, we don't have the plastic nameplates anymore. I'm sure when we're on the road, we probably will, but I don't know, just a little stupid thing.
Yeah, we need metal lockers and plastic nameplates.
There you go. Yeah, I get on you for the metal lockers, and I'm like, well, we need that plastic up top. Getting into actual football, though, starting things off, I think, you know, we'll just run through a lot of the headlines for training camp here. That's what we usually do with these training camp and off-season podcasts, and like I said, we'll talk about our beloved Mark Murphy leaving us at the end, but first thing I think to talk about is Matthew Golden. He has been as advertised. Then again, at the same time, you know, I say that, but I feel like I've been hyping up the receiver core for the last 3 years with these young guys, and no one's really, you know, been the dude to emerge from that group. However, Golden has been pretty spectacular from the beginning. It sounds like just this week was the first time he had an actual drop during team periods. Before that, his hands have been perfect, which coming out of the draft, or at least early on in his career, I think at Houston, his hands were a little suspect, but then with Texas, it got a lot better. And obviously now with the Packers, they've been pretty solid. He had a 60-yard touchdown or a 54-yard touchdown at Tuesday's practice. Love and Gold both talked afterwards how, like, the previous day they ran that same exact play. He, on his double move, he didn't sell it enough. And then, of course, the day after, he sells a little bit better and makes it a big old touchdown. The speed he has, it's good. I mean, we keep seeing little clips here. I don't know what we, again, it's training camp, so we're basically going off of what we read about and everything that's going on. But this receiving core now with Matthew Golden, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Romeo Dubs, even the Kansas City guy. I don't know why I'm blanking on his name now.
McCole Hardman.
He's been running with the ones quite a bit, too. It does seem now like those are going to be the guys. I think Malik Heath is probably going to be the odd man out. Bo Melton is now officially a corner. Christian Watson, he did say to Jason Wilde yesterday that he assumes he's going to be on the PUP, even though it was reported today, or he told one of the reporters that he ran, because he's not practicing, but he's doing, you know, like individual, his own little drills and rehab shit. He was clocked at 22 miles per hour, and he his previous high was 23 miles per hour when he was completely healthy. So pretty good to hear that.
So he's slower.
Yeah, he's only at 95% right now. I actually calculated it. I was like, okay, what is it? Okay, well, it's not too bad. But yeah, I guess overall thoughts with reading tweets and articles about the wide receiver group so far in training camp.
I mean, it does feel like if Golden turns out to be as advertised, and that's what it looks like as of right now, like having a sure-handed guy who can be the number one is like what this locker room needed. So that's at least like that feels like what we've been missing. So it'd be good to have like somebody who can just catch the ball. Like we just need guys like when the 2011 offense, everybody could catch the ball. Like we didn't have the most outrageous. I mean, James dropped the ball from time to time.
James Jones dropped the easy ones and made the amazing ones.
Yes, true. But like those guys weren't like the biggest studs in the world as far as like athleticism, but they just like they ran good routes and they caught the ball. And we have enough talent on the field that can do that and can catch the ball. You can do a lot of good things. And so I hope like that's kind of like what I hope this year is like you put enough talent out there, they're consistent enough and catch the ball. And like if Golden helps that and, you know, just gets that catch rate up, like, I don't know. As somebody said, maybe we talked about this last time too, but like Loves was like the as far as like if you take his drops out that the receivers had, mm-hmm. his like I don't remember exactly what the term, it's like AD whatever something R or something whatever, like whatever the statistic is, he was like near like one or two if you take out the drops. So it's like, I don't know, kind of interesting.
The thing I'm excited about with Golden is seeing him get open deep. Like our concern before the draft with Christian Watson out was who's going to be that deep threat to take the mm-hmm. top off of the defense. And seeing Golden get open deep, but then he's also running intermediate routes. Like it seems like he has a more refined route tree than Watson. It seems like Watson is basically yes. go deep and we'll find you. Kind of feels early on, and again, this is training camp and this is against the Packers defense and perhaps against future UPS men. So I get it, grain of salt. But
or former wide receivers.
That too. seeing what Matthew Golden is doing is certainly, it's certainly a reason for optimism, I'll say. And it kind of makes me wonder, like, what is Christian Watson's role going to be when he gets back? Is it going to be more of a blocker? Because he was one of the better blockers before he got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those with Watson where he's such a... You're right about the route tree not being as refined. It seems like that was another thing that's popped up with Golden, too, is how he... I forgot who had tweeted it, but how he's... And got it, every fucking tweet for the most part, especially the blogger boys who are allowed to practice now, too. How it's like he's unguardable on slants. It's like that would be fun to see that again, because that really hasn't been as much of a staple as it had been in the past.
To your point, though, I think Watson's still like Golden doesn't have, he has like 40 speed, but it doesn't look like it on tape. I wonder how that translates. It'll be interesting to see him on the field with other guys in the NFL. But like, I feel like Watson just like has that neck. He's got like the Randy Moss gear where it's like, yes, Randy's 40 time was amazing, but like something about once he was 20 yards down the field, he like just separated from everybody. And that's like the type of speed that Watson has. And I just feel like that's got to still be his role, is like take the top off, right? Like,
yeah,
he's just send him. Like,
he's like,
hey, Christian, your conditioning better be really good because we're going to run you up and down the field all day.
He had like he's got the effortless long stride about him. And like you're saying, like you just see the clips of Golden. He's not as fast, but it is like that quickness. And it's just like, it's like his cleats work better the way he runs. Cause it's like, there's no misstep and everything's just so smooth with what he's doing. Again, it's just training camp, it's just whatever, but it'll be fun to actually see what happens during preseason.
He looks like a guy who's just like hell to cover, like out of your breaks. Like not necessarily a straight line, but like as he, you know, like maybe he fills that, runs those routes that I forget what the name of the route is, but the deep in that Dobbs ran so well last year, like that in breaking, like as you get 15 yards down the field and break it to the inside, like that feels like it would just be a nightmare to cover for Golden.
He's the other rookie too, Savion Williams. He's had some run with the first team too here and there. I feel like we've hinted at it since the season was over, but I still wouldn't be shocked if we move one of these wideouts. I don't know if it's someone like Dobbs or Wicks who seem like the most likely, or if it is just like we're trading our eventual cut for your eventual cut, and then we move someone like Malik Heath. Because against trading someone away like Dontavian Wicks, who's got 2 years left on his contract, and I still think he has a lot of potential. Everyone knows how he was like one of the best separators in the NFL last year. He just couldn't catch. And then Romeo Dobbs, it's like, yeah, you could trade him away, but what are you going to get? You're going to get like a fifth or sixth round pick and him being a receiver, and I think he's got a chance to have a decent year. And you see other wideouts like De'Ami Brown, I believe, for the Jaguars. He got a pretty decent contract last year for like 10 mil per, and he's this undersized guy. And it's like, well, if you just keep him on your roster this year, the comp pick you're going to get is like a fourth or fifth rounder. So you might as well keep him, have someone else sign him, and then get an even better draft pick, albeit it'll be a year later. But either which way, I don't know if that's going to actually happen. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I guess in my opinion, that's why I would argue to keep everybody, is because we really don't know who is worth keeping. Like, why not let all of them use this as kind of an audition year, and then we decide. I mean, like right now, if Romeo Dobbs' contract was up today, would you re-sign Romeo Dobbs? I don't know that I would.
No, hell no. Not with him skipping class last year.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is that what happened? Is that what we're saying?
Or... yeah, I mean, that's always what I'm not going to get into people saying other things about what it was and oh, whatever. Okay, offensive line, the offensive line shuffle. I mean, there's been a lot of news for the offensive line. It was one of the only things to really talk about this offseason with contracts going on. Zach Tom did get paid four years, $88 million. Pretty decent. A lot of tackles got paid in the last week here too, and his deal looks pretty good. His cap hit doesn't go to $20 million until 2028, I believe, his cap hit. So that's pretty cool. And obviously him still having 1 year left of his rookie deal, his average is something like $18 or $17 million per year, which is pretty good for one of the better right tackles in the league. Elgton Jenkins did show up to training camp. There was a bit of a question about that. He didn't practice for the first week or so with a back injury, and it did sound like it was legit. Again, and with him kind of being upset with his contract, there's been some, I don't know, people not knowing exactly what that was about, thinking that he wants a new deal. However, he has 2 years left on his current contract. It's not about wanting more money. It's just how he's switching positions. He's fine with what he's getting paid this year. He's fine with what he's getting paid next year. It's just there's no guaranteed money next year. And with him switching positions, he would have liked to get some of next year's money guaranteed. And the Packers were like, we're not going to set a new precedent for, you know, restructuring contracts when you have 2 years left on your deal. And we haven't seen, you know, how you are at center, you know, out of just having to replace Josh Myers when he was injured.
Don't centers also get paid less than
not really? That's okay. See, that's what people were thinking, and that's what it used to be, but now it's pretty comparable.
Oh really?
Yes. Hmm. Yeah, guards and centers for the most part get paid just about, if you look at the average, it might be a difference in like $2 million, but even if you look at, he's being paid right now as one of the top centers in the league. So it's like, well, What's your argument here? You're getting paid as a top five center, play as a top five center, and then we'll probably keep you around. So we'll just have to see what actually ends up happening there. Aaron Banks has been kind of often on the field. He's been banged up a lot his career, and it's a back injury that's been, you know, he's started practice, had to drop out, missed practice, came back, got pulled out again. So since he's been back now, though, it has been interesting because Jordan Morgan, who obviously we drafted him as a tackle, didn't play tackle at all last year. He just rotated a right guard with Sean Ryan. Today was the first day, and it was with a completely healthy offensive line, so he didn't really have to fill in at any of the guard positions. So he took the majority of the first team snaps at left tackle, which is interesting. Obviously, everyone probably thinks for the most part that Rashid Walker is going to be the opening day left tackle just because he's been a pretty solid starter for the most part since he took over for David Bakhtiari a couple years ago. But again, like I think I said the last time we recorded, to me, I feel like Morgan's just going to have to blow the doors off if he's going to play left tackle because the versatility he has, he just makes the most sense of being the odd guy out. It's going to have to either be him or Sean Ryan because Jordan Morgan can play either tackle positions and either guard positions, and Sean Ryan could play either guard positions or center if it happens. So you kind of have some options there if someone drops out. But to me, it's especially with Rashid Walker being on the last year of his deal, if he's not starting, he's probably going to ask for a trade. And at the same time, again, like I kind of talked about with Romeo Doubs, it just makes sense to let him play out the year. He's probably going to be solid like he's been the previous 2 years. And then if he signs with another team, he's a tackle. He's going to probably get $20 million per year, and you're going to get a decent third or fourth round comp pick 2 years from now. One last thing, Sean Ryan, too, I don't know if you saw during the offseason, he missed a $2 million pay bump because he missed two snaps. If you play so many snaps as a later round pick in the collective bargaining agreement, you get some type of escalator. He was two snaps off for that. They asked him about it. He said, my agent called and said I missed it by two snaps. Supposedly, plays with penalties don't count. The two holding calls I got are two plays that could have gotten me there. So it just makes me want to be better. So he was like, well, if I didn't have those holds, I would have had $2 million more dollars. Where I'm like, wow. Okay, well, if that's what you want to focus on, that works for me. Only other note is Jacob Monk has mostly just repped with the second or third team at center, and it doesn't seem like he's a realistic option to be the center this year. And I would assume if Elton goes down, it sounds like Sean Ryan's probably going to be the one who fills in for him. That's what I got.
The one thing that I saw that I'll comment on the offensive line is, first, just as you talked about, kind of the shuffling around that we've had. I'm not a huge fan of it, just with a couple of new starters, you know, new positions with Jenkins and Banks. I really would have preferred that we could have had all five starters on the field from the beginning of training camp and start to get that rapport down, that timing. The other interesting thing that I heard was, I think it was Goody said that he wouldn't be surprised if the left tackle battle extends into the regular season.
I think Steno said that, the offensive
that was Stenovich. Yep. Okay, you're right. But so that's, you know, same kind of thing. It's like, boy, I would sure rather just find out who our best five is and go with it during the regular season. I just don't like the idea of shuffling guys in and out during the regular season unless, you know, there's an injury or something like that.
Yeah, they did it, you know, for the majority of last year, though, with the right guard position, too.
Before Morgan got hurt, yeah.
They must just love the competition aspect of it. I agree it doesn't make a lot of sense, but the staff seems to love it.
Maybe I overrate the, you know, the timing and having all five guys, but it just seems like at the end of the year, you look at the best offensive line units, it's the ones that have had the same five out there every single game.
And former players have said that same thing. It's like, if you can play for an entire season together, like if you can not have injuries and not move people around positions too, and just play in your position all year long, they're like, by the time you get to the playoffs, it's like telepathy. You know, like, I can't remember who said, if it was like TJ Lang or something like that. He's like, you know, exactly, you don't have to talk. You get to a point where you're like, you just do. And like, So I don't know. Yeah, I think there's something to that.
I feel like that's like a bingo board for this podcast because this always pops up because we always bring up the 2014 Packers and that offensive line. How one, I mean, it was a very talented offensive line, but also they played together all year. I think only Bulaga maybe missed one or two games and that was it. But you're right. It's like, one, it's competition. This, since LaFleur has been in town and with Goody, it's always been about competition. You know, just the way they've drafted too, we see it with the wideouts. It's like they're looking for talent. They're looking to have some type of competition going on in just about every single room. It's also, I wonder how much of it is looking at the long term, which is also a Packers staple, obviously, as well. Because, yeah, you don't want to really, I agree, you don't really want to shuffle the offensive line in game that much and rotate guys. But at the same time, if you know Jordan Morgan's going to be the long-term left tackle, you probably want to get him some snaps during the regular season, especially like during the 2020 and 2021, 2022, well, not so much 2022, where you knew we were making the playoffs. It's like, well, let's get some experience in here. And then come playoff time, we kind of, I'm trying to remember if in 2023, why can't I remember our right guard then who is rotating with Sean Ryan? Because that was all year they were rotating, who ended up signing with the Giants.
Runyon.
Yes, Runyon. John Runyon. Where I can't remember if in the playoffs when they got there, they just had one guy start, which makes a little bit more sense. But I agree. We'd like to get those five guys settled in, but I don't know if the coaching staff is going to agree with that.
Have either of you seen anything about Belton and how he's looked during camp?
That's the other thing that's been a little surprising. He's ran with the second team at, I don't know if it's been left or right tackle, but it's only been tackle. It's interesting how last year Jordan Morgan pretty much only played guard when he played tackle in college. We take Belton in the second round, you know, and he's a big fucking dude. But and there, some people have said that he looks like he'd be a good guard in the NFL. You look at this team, and it looks like we should look for a future guard to start on this team because Sean Ryan will be gone. But he's exclusively played tackle, which is odd because they usually like getting those young guys to play multiple positions, but they haven't done that yet with him. So I'm curious to see if we hear anything about him taking guard snaps later on in training camp.
He seems like too tall to be a guard to me. Like when you look at him, yeah, like almost like guards have like shorter legs. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know. Maybe it's because he's just always standing up because he's a tackle. But
right. And I don't Justice know. Mosqueda said that he thought he looks like he should grade out to be a guard. And you wonder that too. Like I've seen that. Like there was some clip of Caleb Williams. And people are like, oh my God, he can't even, he's too short to look over the offensive line. And I Googled, I'm like, how tall is he? 6'1". I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, how tall is Jordan Love? 6'4". I'm like, okay, that's what I thought. And then I was like, how tall is Aaron Rodgers? That he was 6'2". And I'm like, well, no one ever said anything about Rodgers being too short to look over the offensive
the
line.
The 1 inch doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, never. It's never.
6'4", to, and what is Russell, like 5'3", or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
So like that's a big difference. But
well, Brock,
that's why he can't.
Brock Osweiler was 6'7", or whatever. Like,
seven, yeah.
He can see over every offensive lineman, but it sure didn't help him.
It didn't fucking matter.
Yeah, you want, because I mean, Josh Myers too, we talked about him and how if his length was almost a detriment to his game too, playing center. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens there. And John Williams, the 7th round pick, he hasn't practiced at all. I'll just run through injuries here quick. He hasn't practiced at all. We'll talk about Marshawn Lloyd later. He's banged up with that groin injury. Sounds like it's only going to be short term, but still a bummer with that. And then
didn't he play today?
No.
Wasn't he back in today?
No, he was not.
Or who am I thinking of that was back today?
Dontavian Wicks was back after missing one practice. Savion Williams was back after missing like one practice.
Aaron Banks is back.
Aaron Banks, sorry, yeah, I think he's been back for like two of them. And then, again, I forgot his name, the 5th round pick, Colin Oliver. He's also been out all of training camp and most of the offseason stuff. So hopefully he can heal up pretty quick here. Or once again, you don't want someone like that who could potentially, especially when we lacked pass rush last year, for him to essentially have a red shirt freshman year in the NFL would be less than ideal. You know what? We will take a quick commercial break.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
All right, and we are back with Bo Melton. Bo Melton is a corner. He's officially a corner. You know, I think we, I don't know how much it had been talked about the last time we recorded. I think we said, too, that it was kind of spelling the end for him in Green Bay. And the coaching staff isn't really in charge of roster moves or the final 53. But, God, both Rich Bisaccia and Jeff Hafley. Jeff Hafley said he loves him. Rich said he's going to be a contributor or a big part of this team. So they're acting like he's going to make the team. We'll see. Like I said, he changed his number from 80 to 16, which still isn't really a cornerback number, but I guess it's better than 80.
But yet, it's still an eligible number, though, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, it would be...
So are all the corner numbers, though.
Can we have, so I guess, can we have Melton and Golden trade numbers? Like, that would just look so much better.
You know, yeah. I'm...
That would look better. It would look much better for Bolt or...
yeah. Golden?
No.
Melton?
Yes.
Yeah,
both.
Okay.
Melton. I have said Bolton. And then I got... Right? Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah. I mean, this is in a vacuum, I'd agree, but 16 is such a blah number, too. I think, what was his name? DeAndre Borrell had that number.
Such a QB
Craig
number.
Knoll back in the day had it, too. Doug Peterson was 18. Yeah, Scott.
Scott, spin move?
Brett, hell yeah. Brett Swain, Super Bowl champion. Oh, Brett, yeah, Swain, Doug, wore number 16.
Doing my thing, Brett that Swain, Brett true. Swain. Yeah, that's true. I forgot about him. I wish he could just be number 2. Number 2 would look so good.
Yeah, that would look good. I like that.
But I would say stick with 22 instead of 16, just because it's like both of them are kind of 22 is still going to be weird. Whatever.
22 is a great running back number, I believe, like in my heart.
Yeah, it's up there. But yeah, Bo Melton still sounds like he's mainly going to contribute on special teams. He's one of the leading gunners or flyers, as Rich Bisaccia calls him. It seems like maybe they made him transition one just because we were so thin at corner. And two, you might as well just have him practice up on tackling and, you know, following guys like that rather than being a wide receiver when we have so many on this team. He did have some first-team snaps today, too. I don't think they actually view him as a starter, obviously, especially with how it's ran so far with the starters. As it's been Hobbs and Nixon with the first team outside, Bullard playing slot, and then Valentine has been the top perimeter corner for the second team defense. I assume those three guys are going to keep rotating. Carrington Valentine, it's just kind of an odd, I don't know who to compare it to, and he is a seventh round pick, so it's not like that's super desirable, high caliber player that you think, but it's like, God, it really feels like he's a guy who should be a starter, but it's just tough because, you know, our top three guys are all outside corners and none of them can really play in the slot, or at least with Keyshawn, they really trust him being an outside guy and maybe just that attitude that he brings. But I don't know, corner spot is kind of just a weird spot, because then after that, it's Robinson, the seventh round pick, Kalen King, the seventh round pick from last year. And then there was like a free agent pickup who played a bit in the league. So I don't know. We might just end up keeping something like 5 corners and then just keeping a bunch of safeties too, and Bullard playing in the slot. Evan Williams can play in the slot a bit too. Zane Anderson's halfway decent. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with all those guys and then if Bo Melton actually makes the team.
Quick follow-up on that number 22 debate we were just having. Mm-hmm. 22 might be the best running back number ever. You got Emmett, Jim Brown, Fred Taylor,
Jim Brown,
O.J.
was 32.
Simpson. Okay, I'm using the AI thing, and I did think that that was a little weird. Okay, so that's wrong.
I always like
OJ was 32.
Well, that okay. I mean, that brings up the grit.
So AI is failing me.
As far as looks, I think 25 is the best looking running back number.
It keeps saying OJ. Derrick Henry.
Okay.
I'll isn't give it 22? That one.
You know what? It popped up Najee Harris.
Mm.
So these are great. So, okay, we're going to cut this part from the pod.
Dexter
Williams.
Dexter Williams, I think, was 22.
Paul Kraus. Was he a Viking?
I thought he was a safety.
I don't know. It doesn't say what position, but I'm pretty sure he played for the Vikings, right?
Yes.
Sounds like a...
Yeah, I don't know. That sounds right. Moving on, inside linebacker. This is another interesting spot. It's weird because this might be the deepest we've been at inside linebacker in a long time. Probably said it last year too, but it was also probably true at that point. Adrian Cooper put on 20 pounds of, I don't know, probably fat involved too, but also muscle.
Has to be.
Yeah.
20-some pounds.
Yeah.
Is insane.
So he said he hasn't lost a step. He's still as fast as he was before. So we'll see what happens there. Quay is slowly coming back from his injury, but he did officially get cleared. I think he's only actually done individual drills so far. So I don't think there's been any.
What if Quay also put on 20 pounds? That would be bad. We'd have to put him at end.
The other thing that hasn't popped up, and I want someone from the media to ask, ask Halfley. Well, I guess I don't know when they're going to talk to the coordinators again. I don't know why McKinney doesn't have the green dot. He had the green dot with the Giants. With Quay and Cooper, it's like maybe you give it to Cooper just because you know he's going to be your stud of the future. Quay's a dummy, you know? I mean, he's very athletic, and he was pretty good the back half before he got injured last year. But it's like, why don't you – they keep saying – Matt said it, Halfley said it, that Xavier is a coach on the field. It's like, why don't you just give him the green dot? He's the guy furthest back anyways, and make him make those changes at the line too.
But do you want somebody that far away? Because making D line changes, like don't. That's why you want linebackers to have it, because they can talk to everybody.
Well, how loud is his voice?
He's very quiet.
has anybody asked him?
So yeah, Quay. We'll see when he gets. I mean, I assume it's going to be Cooper and Quay for the most part in the middle there. Isaiah Simmons. His name's popped up quite a bit. Again, they just talk about how long and fast he is. Rich has talked about too how they assume he's going to be a contributor on special teams too. I think he blocked a kick or punt last year, so I'm kind of assuming he's going to make the team. It's very odd because then we have Isaiah McDuffie too, which I thought was a bit of a questionable re-signing. I think he got like $6 million per year, which is like twice as much as what they were offering Aaron Jones the previous year to come back on a one-year deal. And then we have Hopper too, who I think the team was low on just because of bringing in Isaiah Simmons, bringing back McDuffie. And Hopper's played well, allegedly, you know, obviously we're not there and we don't watch X's and O's, blah, blah, blah. But it's his name keeps popping up. And even when they put the pads on, his name popped up even more. He's batted a couple balls. I think he has one or two picks even, which it seems like he was more of a thumper coming out of college. So everything, having four or five guys there who you have some type of confidence in, when in the past it's like, oh, fuck, God, why can't, Hank's favorite guy. Oh, not Zach.
God. He did the cards?
No, well.
He went to the Giants.
No, Blake Martinez, but not, Blake Martinez is fine. I'm thinking.
He's a card guy, right?
No, the special teams guy. Fuck. Special teamer, short, seventh round pick.
Ty Summers,
yes.
Oh, I like Ty Summers.
No, he was fucking terrible. And
well, he's a good guy. He had like two good games in the preseason.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like he actually, there would be times where there would be an injury and he would come into the game. It's like now we've got three guys who would be better than fucking Ty Summers.
Didn't he have like one really good game in a preseason game where he had like a forced fumble, a pick,
probably,
and like, wasn't that him?
Probably in like the third
fourth quarter.
I just remember that, like, wasn't that a thing? Or maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
No, you're
had,
probably
like,
right. Well, I mean, Christian
Welch. And then
Welch
he got cut, like,
too.
The next week. Oh, you know what it was? I'm thinking of Christian Welch.
Yeah.
Because then he got cut right after, didn't he?
Right, yes. Because I think, yeah, he had a pick.
He had, like, the best game he could possibly have, and then he got cut.
Yeah, and he's unfortunately probably going to get cut this year, too. And, I don't know, maybe he'd make a 53 somewhere. Or he'd be someone who'd be on our practice squad, and we'd call up to play special teams. Because apparently he's been running with the top special team units too, but I'd be pretty surprised if we keep six inside linebackers. But I don't know, anything else you guys have on those guys?
I think it would be cool to see Isaiah Simmons actually like contribute, just because like he was supposed to be so good. It's kind of like those guys that just disappear when in the draft they're so good. You recognize the name and you're like, oh, where did that guy go? And then to see him actually contribute, because he is super athletic.
Yes.
So if he could, even if you're just blitzing him, just put him in there and send him. I don't know. Maybe that's the role.
I was going to say, I mean, he was what, the eighth overall pick? Like something like that.
I know he was top 10, yeah.
He got drafted top 10 for a reason. Like there's something there. And I guess I would feel more comfortable with him coming off the bench or, you know, starting in a pinch for an injured player because he has that starting experience versus, you know, Christian Welch, say. Like he's a fine special teamer and can fill in for a few snaps here or there, but I mean, if I had to choose between the two of them to start a game for an injured Isaiah McDuffie, I'm taking Simmons every day of the week.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see what happens come the regular season, but I assume those top guys there that we mentioned outside of Welch are going to make this 53-man roster. Next thing, Packers are emphasizing forced fumbles. It's kind of been a story since the beginning of training camp. Halfley did talk a little bit yesterday or the day before. He said, one, that this training camp is so much different for him. One, it's nice because they don't have to do installs because obviously he was bringing in a brand new defense last year. So this year with pretty much everyone returning on defense, there's been a lot less just to have to go over, you know, your basics of the defense and all of that. But then again, at the same time, he said it's almost like there's a new defensive coordinator just because there were all these changes that they made for how he calls plays because he thought we'd be able to get away with just that four-man rush, you know, up front. And then we had to do those simulated blitzes as the year went on because, you know, Gary wasn't much of a pass rusher. But he, again, the emphasis has been on forcing fumbles, which is hilarious. What they want to do is lead the league in turnovers. Obviously, I mean, that's a nice goal to have, yada, yada. But it's hilarious. Do you guess where we were in forced turnovers last year, where we ranked?
I'm going to say, like,
where we ranked? Bottom half.
I was going to say, like, 10th or 12th. I thought we were pretty good at forcing fumbles.
We were forcing
turnovers last year.
We were fourth in the league in forced turnovers last year. I think it was, like, 16 forced fumbles or something, too. The goal is to force, one, lead the league, but also to force 43 turnovers, which Wildy was asking around trying to figure out, like, where did that number come from? Because it's not like, I don't think it's the record. And what it sounds like it might be, I forgot who came up with it. We'll just say it was me. I came up with this. The most turnovers forced in a season for the Packers was 2010 when we forced 40. And I think what they're doing is prorating that over a 17-game season, which would be 43 turnovers, which would be the most turnovers in Packers history. But along with this emphasis, they have Wendell Davis, who's a quality control coach. He leads every defensive meeting they've been having now at the start just to go over forcing turnovers, reviewing the turnovers that they did force. And apparently in the meeting room there, they now have a siren installed that they buzz every time they review a new turnover to get the guys going, whatever. I'm like, is there going to be like a fucking turnover chain or something on the sideline this year? Like, are they going to do something like that? Or like a piece of cheese that they hand out? I don't know what it would be. Yeah, that would be much cooler. But I thought it was interesting. And the other thing is how far we've come where we were fourth in the league and, like I said, forced turnovers last year. We want to be tops in the league after being a pretty good defense last year. This is year two of Jeff Halfley. And then you just think of Joe Barry. And he's like, I just want to survive the season. Like, I just want to be halfway decent on defense. And it's like, we're just on a completely different level this year. I also wonder, Nathaniel Hackett, he's back on the staff. Kind of like what Robert Saleh was doing last year where he's self-scouting. So he's self-scouting the defense and helping them out for, you know, what the how offenses would attack them. And with this whole ball king, I don't know if I mentioned that, Wendell Davis is there. Everyone in the building has to refer to him as the ball king because he's in charge of leading the room on forcing turnovers and getting the ball back. One, I wonder if he was involved, or two, if Nathaniel Hackett is like the Squidward meme of him in his house looking out at SpongeBob and Patrick running out happy, looking at Halfley and Wendell Davis like, God, I used to have the gold zone and now these guys got the ball king and I'm just a fucking assistant defensive coach on this team and now they've got their own thing going on. But either way, I thought that was pretty interesting to hear that they're emphasizing that as much as they are.
This might be a stupid take or a stupid question.
Yeah.
And I understand that I'm 35 years old. I'm older than every dude on the defense for sure. Probably every dude on the team, I guess, at this point, to be honest. So calling this quality control coach the ball king and having the buzzer siren going in the meeting room for every forced fumble or turnover or whatever, like, does that really get people excited and get them focused on forcing turnovers? Like, it just comes off as cheesy to me. Like, I don't know.
But, like, the best football, like, speeches and, like, the best football, like, moments from coaches are super cheesy. And it's like, do you remember the stuff Mike McCarthy used to do? Didn't he bring a watermelon in one time and smash it?
With the Cowboys, yeah. The Cowboys, he brought a watermelon in before a playoff game or something, or when they were on a losing streak, and he smashed in front of the team. And the big one with the Packers was getting the rings sized on everyone on the team the day before the Super Bowl.
It's like,
I mean,
getting
the ring sized, I don't think is cheesy at all. Like, sure, I think that's
not cheesy.
That's a fantastic
motivator
factor. But having a siren go off in my ear every single play there's a turnover, I'd get a headache after about 10 minutes.
Well, it's keeping the guys engaged.
Yeah, it can be corny and dumb, but like, you're not falling asleep in that meeting room. Like, you're paying attention.
No,
I think that's the goal.
I would probably be rolling my eyes like, oh my God, we got to do this shit again.
Yeah.
But there's no one on that team. Like, there's no veterans on the team. So everyone is engaged. You know what I mean?
Again,
like, they're all young.
I preface this whole thing with I'm 35 years old. I'm an old man. So I get that they're not trying to motivate dudes in their mid-30s to do this
like,
shit.
Like, Rodgers would hate it.
I was going to say,
Rodgers
could you imagine doing that with Charles Woodson?
But I understand where you're coming from. But one, I think Jeff Halfley is a very believable guy. He's a very good speaker. I mean, I think he's a great motivator, too. He trusts Wendell Davis here to do this. And then at the same time, you're talking about Rodgers. I mean, Rodgers loved the gold zone shit. And that was Austin Powers. You know, like, that's a pretty dumb thing, too.
Yes, because Austin Powers is old. That's why he liked it.
Sure.
And it's a little weird.
And Rodgers is a big movie guy.
Right. But it was everyone on that team. Like, when Hackett got hired to be the Broncos head coach, I know everyone thinks a lot less of Hackett now. But I can't remember seeing, well, it's also new age with social media and everything. But it's everyone on the offensive side of the ball was posting on Twitter, posting on Instagram, congratulating him and saying what a great coach he was. And he led with the cheese. He led with the cheesiness. So I think, again, it's better than, I'd rather have this than fucking Joe Barry, who's going up there and he's like, well, you know, if they rotate a guy on the outside, Preston Smith has to cover him. You know, there's just nothing else we can do. It's like, he doesn't have a lot to say as is. So I'm fine if we're doing this, and we'll see how it goes long term. You know, maybe it falls apart and we don't force any turnovers this year, but I like hearing about it. It's interesting.
I swear to God, though, if we have a turnover chain or a turnover cheesehead or a big gong on the sideline or a basketball hoop to dunk through that all these stupid college teams have these days, oh my God, it's going to be a long season for me watching as a fan.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do that stuff on the sidelines. You can do it in practice and in meetings, but you can't do it on the sidelines. I just don't think the NFL would let you, right? The chain, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I would think that's not going to happen, but whatever. I got a couple other things. I think we'll save these things for the team not being soft or trying to break that label. A couple other notes. Things to talk about. Stackhouse, the undrafted guy out of Georgia. Him along with the Brinson, the sixth round pick. Like, today, Stackhouse was running with the twos. ahead of Colby Wooden and Brinson. It seems I've never been a big Colby Wooden fan. The beginning of last year too, he was a healthy scratch for a couple of games. I'm wondering if he's not going to make this team, and these two Georgia kids are going to make it. LVN has had a decent camp, it sounds like. Again, we're just reading tweets, reading articles, but I don't remember hearing much about him at all the previous two seasons. And like, he beat Zach Tom today, which is good. Rashawn Gary, I mean, he beat like Zach Tom in back-to-back snaps, but Rashawn Gary is the best training camp player of all time. He's always an absolute animal during training camp, and then we get to the regular season and he disappears a little bit. Oh, this is what the stats, so we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording. Because Todd, you were saying like, oh, you know, Brenton Cox, he's the only guy who really tries to pass rush on this team. You know, he'd go in and, I mean, it seemed that way where, I mean, his pass rush win rate or sack percentage must have been better than just about everyone else on the team. So Rashawn Gary was voted one of the top 100 players in the NFL this year, which was a little surprising. The stat that they showed was Gary on third down had a pressure rate of 22%. Which is pretty good. Like, that's one of the highest in the leagues. Guess what it was on all other downs?
No idea.
10%.
7.3. Oof. Which is fucking terrible. Again, I wonder how much of this was just our defensive line coach last year really emphasizing stopping the run, because it was just such a different look from those guys up front last year, because we were always so used to Gary not setting the edge and always going wide. And last year we didn't see much of that at all, so I'm very curious to see what happened. Again, I think we talked about earlier this offseason too how Kenny Clark was asked about the defensive line head coach and if they feel any type of responsibility or whatever after a guy like, you know, getting a coach fired, and he's like, I'm not even going to talk about that. So you could tell, like, he did not like our old defensive line coach. But, yeah, Stackhouse, LVN. Maybe LVN, is there hope? You guys feel good about LVN or Rashawn Gary, or is it still a wait and see?
There could be hope, but hope in one hand, shit in the other. I mean, which is going to fill up first? And so far.
Well, hope isn't a physical
shit
thing.
In the other hand.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, could be.
I agree. Prove it to me when the lights come on.
Yeah, it's at the point now where it's just like, until I see something, I'm not excited about LVN. Unfortunately, like, I wanted to be. Like, he seemed like, oh, he's raw and he'll develop. And it's just literally, did we already talk about this or was that off the air? But I'm like, I just, when I watch him, I don't know what he's doing. I look at him and I'm like, I just don't know what he's trying to do.
All he does is bull rush.
He eats a block.
He has no moves.
They did say there's been reports that he's thrown in a spin move and it worked against Zach Tom or one of the tackles. So,
but like high school kids spin. You know what I mean? What am I missing? True, but like, even if he was spinning and getting knocked over, I'd be like, well, at least he's spinning. At least he's doing something. That's why I look at him. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
He probably beat Zach Tom the first time he pulled out the spin move, because Zach Tom was like, what the fuck? You didn't do that before. Then he tried it again, and Zach Tom just stonewalls him because he's like, oh, okay, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Like, what did they work on in practice? That's what I want to know. Like, what were they doing in practice?
I don't. Well, Covington, again, he's been the guy who his name has popped up a bunch for the guys really buying in on the defensive line. So I would be very surprised if there isn't some type of jump with the pass rush this year and just those guys performing overall. The other thing, too, is JJ Enagbare. There hasn't really been any notes with him. I think it's pretty much been LVN and Gary running with the ones all of training camp. I think JJ's rotated in with
the
twos.
And Brenton Cox.
Right, and Brenton Cox, he's been kind of the one who's popped up here, too. So we'll have to see what happens with the sixth round pick. But JJ might end up being the odd guy out. Maybe he ends up being someone who we'd trade away, too. You can't have enough pass rushers, but I don't know what it's going to be weird come roster cutdown time for who's going to make this team, just with some of these draft picks who, you know, aren't going to get a ton of snaps this year versus vets who you need to keep versus, you know, how many offensive linemen are you going to have plus all the wideouts we have too. So I'm curious to see how that's going to shake out at the end. The other thing, Brandon McManus, today or yesterday, I think it was today, missed his first kick. You got something, Todd? What? You were pointing at the sky.
No, I just he missed one kick.
Okay, yeah. He missed one, which is funny.
I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, he's a weirdo too. I listened to his locker room availability. He trained with Travis Kelce this offseason, which was interesting.
Makes sense.
He seems kind of douchey. He said like they were asked about or Rich said something about him like not missing a kick, and his response was, "Well, hey, you guys brought me here to make kicks, so this isn't really anything out of the ordinary." It's like, dude, okay, whatever, shut the up. Because he was like 27 of 27 or 28 from 28. He also said today that his best kick of training camp was his miss. He said that was the one that felt the best off his foot, which it's like, dude, you have one miss.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, you have one. Could you imagine, like, it's a game-winning field goal?
You tell coach that? Hey, that was a good kick. Oh, it's the only one you missed. Yeah, it felt good, though.
You miss a game-winning field goal, the season's over, and it's like, talking to the media afterwards, well, actually, that was the best kick I've had all season, so I don't know what you guys are getting on me about. There's also been a funny thing where his multiple times he kicks it, and he goes, like, oh, fuck. He's like, oh, fucker, oh, I missed or something, and then it goes in. Which is strange, too. Apparently, the special teams guys have gotten on him because it's like you keep complaining about these kicks that are coming off your foot and you've made every single kick but this one. So, very nice to have that as opposed to the previous years when we had automatic Anders, who wasn't automatic, and then, God, I don't remember the guy who had, like, the chin strap beard who came in.
Braden Narveson?
Yes, I knew it was an yeah, Braden Narveson, that poor,
good memory.
That poor guy. What was he, number 44?
Yes.
A true Wisconsinite.
Yeah.
His wife was from like some small town in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think nearby too. I wish he could have stuck on just because that having a kicker with the number 44, I just kind of like that ugly aesthetic. There's been a lot of ugly
aesthetics. That's gritty. That's metal lockers.
Yeah, there you go. I'm finally getting used to Zach Tom wearing 50 as a right tackle, but that's still just ugly in my book. I guess that's it for training camp stuff. You guys have any other players or things that you're interested in or anything that you've thought about in this first week of training camp? I think we covered things.
Maybe the double tight. With the love connection with Musgrave.
Yeah.
Like maybe the double tight is real. I've been waiting for that for years.
Yeah, I didn't write that down, but Luke Musgrave today seemingly had a pretty good practice. Bill Huber had him as his player of the day. I think he had two really long catches. One I think he said was like a sideline catch where he drug his feet or whatever. Musgrave's interviews are hilarious too because you could tell he just hates talking to the media. Like the first question was like, "Oh, what?" And it was a bad question, so I don't blame him. But he's like, "What do you? What did you think you did good at today?" And he's like, "I don't know." He's like, "I'm not going to answer this stupid fucking question for you." But again, he talked about too how he's really excited for this year. And I'm sure he's said it in the past, but that whole tight end room, and that's been kind of something hinted at this offseason as well. Getting more two tight end sets again, perhaps being more of a hard-nosed football team, running the ball a bit more, getting two tight ends out there with Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, who's obviously the best football player on this team, but very curious to see what happens with Musgrave this year as well.
Yeah, as long as he's not falling down on his routes, we got a shot. Two tight end sets will be
fun. Musgrave, yeah.
I mean, outside of Golden, based on what we've seen in training camp so far, are we expecting any rookies to really contribute this year?
Colin Oliver.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because Colin Oliver obviously has... Well, Baron Sorrell, his name has popped up a little bit too. He's probably the number two guy who's going to contribute.
I mean, Savion has to contribute, right? Like, he's just an athlete. So, like, you toss him the ball. Even if he can't catch, like, you got to do something with him, right?
You're not wrong, but it's like everyone's a fucking athlete at the skill position group on this team.
Savion's just like a different type. Like, that's got to be your jet motion guy. That's got, you know what I mean? Like, right?
Who's getting the reps at kick return and punt return?
There's been a lot of guys because it's still been Jaden Reed, Keyshawn, Nicole Hardman for the most part, too.
Isn't there a dude that we picked up from, like, was it the Steelers or something that's super fast.
I don't remember what
I'll
like a corner.
Him. I'll find him.
You're probably full of shit. You're probably wrong.
I think he's a running back.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah maybe.
Israel Abanaconda. Yep.
There's
Abanaconda.
There's no way that dude makes the team. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know, because they really like Emmanuel Wilson and Chris Brooks, too. I still wonder if we're going to only keep three running backs and have that fourth guy on the practice squad, then promote him if we need to.
That might be the battle I'm most interested to watch during the preseason is second/third running back after Jacobs.
Yeah,
because like you said, they really like Emmanuel Wilson. They like Chris Brooks a lot for his pass blocking ability. Obviously, Marshawn Lloyd, a third round pick. He's a little bit banged up now, but sounds like he was off to a strong start in camp. So if we can only keep two of those, I'll be interested to see who they pick.
Yeah, I mean, I would think Lloyd's guaranteed to be on the team. And then, God, I don't know. It's just a weird spot. Again, I'm surprised that we didn't invest in running back more these last two drafts. Again, Lloyd was a third round pick, but again, he's always had injury issues. He's always had fumbling issues. And with just having Josh Jacobs and no one else who's really a solid guy in that room, or at least proven in the league, especially this last draft, there was a lot of really good running backs. So I was surprised we didn't draft one, but we'll see what happens. I'm still a Lloyd believer, but it's one of those where it's like, God, he's just got to fucking figure out how to stay healthy, and I think he'll be halfway decent. Because again, too, Josh Jacobs, and I mean, he's kind of a team leader guy, so he might lie about this shit, but he's like, Lloyd is going to be a contributor on this team. Like, he's a difference maker. And that's the thing, too. It's like, looking at this roster now, too, and maybe we'll talk about this later on in training camp, where I almost want to talk about just, like, the variable players on this team. You know, not guys, I mean, you could probably include Jordan Love, obviously, but not, you know, not like Rashid Walker, not Zach Tom, not Josh Jacobs, but guys who like Golden or Luke Musgrave or LVN, just these guys, or, you know, like fucking Carrington Valentine, where the floor is just so much lower and the ceiling is so high, where if those guys who you don't really expect a ton from all of a sudden turn into a huge difference maker, like again, Golden, if he just turns into that playmaker that we haven't really had since Devontae's been gone, the ceiling for this team just goes up exponentially. But we'll see.
Did you guys see that they tested the hand strength of the players?
I did.
Did you see who had the highest? I didn't watch the whole video, but
the 1 minute video, you couldn't stick it out.
Couldn't stick it out. Did you see who had the highest?
I did. Yeah. God, I can't remember. Oh, God.
Orzich.
Yeah, I know. I knew it was a long snapper. I almost said Lavat. I think that was the old trainer that we had, or maybe he was a long snapper back in the
which,
day.
Which, have you ever used one of those things?
Yeah.
He had like over 200.
Right.
That's insane.
Yeah, like everyone else got, it was like offensive linemen or whoever were grabbing it. And like Elton
Jenkins.
We're like
Jenkins. 150s to like 180.
Yeah, I'd grab it. I'm sure
and
it'd be
he
like
was
70.
At like 200. Yeah. I think somebody grabbed it and it was like, it was double digits, not triple. And it was like,
the funniest thing was the first guy got it and it was like 140 or something. He's like, oh yeah, that's the winner right there. And then the next dude comes up and it's like 180. Like, okay.
I wonder if other NFL teams did it, if the long snapper does have like the better grip, just because it's like they have to mess with their hands more than just about anyone else on the team outside of the quarterback. I think Jordan Love was at like 180 or 170 something too. I think
I was going to say maybe QBs too, because I do feel like if you have giant hands, like that tool, that is probably easier to squeeze that thing if you have giant hands too, and QBs would maybe, and they use their hands all the time. So, or like receivers, I would think would have really strong hands.
Yeah, maybe.
They would probably work their hands
out.
But
not on this team. That's the thing.
That's true.
Matthew Golden.
Yeah, Matthew Golden's only, all the other receivers, 50. Matthew Golden, 220.
Do you remember ever hearing like Gronk used to like do, you put your hands in the rice and like there's like things you do, you put your hands in a bucket of rice and it's like it's pretty hard to do. And then he would go catch like 100 balls after he did that, like to strengthen his hands, which is apparently.
So there's like a bucket of rice and you have to burrow.
You've never seen that?
No.
Okay, so you fill like a 5-gallon bucket with rice and you stick your hands in and then you do like movements with your hands. And that's how you get your hands strong. It's like essentially like you know how water is just resistant from every angle? It's the same idea. Yeah. It's just that the rice is, it's harder. So.
Interesting.
It's kind of cool.
Very cool.
The more you know.
Yeah.
Are we wrapping it up
here? Yeah, we're wrapping it up. I don't think we have anything else to talk about for actual players. What do you have here, Todd?
Okay, I was looking this up a little bit earlier. The fastest linebackers to ever run the 40. Do you want to take a shot at who the top three are? Ugh.
I mean, I've been not as up to date on...
Shaquem Griffin in 2018 ran a 4.38, which is 4.3. Lightning fast.
That's insane.
I mean, absolutely lightning fast. Anomaly, because he was not a linebacker. And then tied for second is Micah Parsons with 4.39.
Really?
And Isaiah Simmons.
Okay, yeah. I was going to be... the only name I was going to throw out is Isaiah Simmons, and then maybe like fucking Quay's in the top 10 or something, but I don't know.
Well, Cooper's faster than Quay. Cooper, 4.51.
Okay.
So only 0.02 slower than Isaiah Simmons. And Quay is a 4.52.
So I don't know if this dude is on the list. What did Aaron Curry run? Do you remember that dude that was drafted like fourth overall by the Seahawks?
Like 2007?
Yeah, 2008? He was a complete bust. But he was, I remember in that draft, he was like the safest pick in the entire draft. And then he busted out.
Well, that was like
4.52.
Okay. Oh, so okay.
So Quay speed, edge speed.
Okay. The reason I brought it up was I thought that maybe he was some super fast dude, but I'm glad that I wasn't completely off base where you're like, oh yeah, he ran a 4.7.
I mean, that is super fast.
Yeah, for sure.
That's for an inside linebacker, that is super fast.
Just didn't think we'd be talking about Aaron Curry on this episode.
Just got to pull out.
I was just going to say, though, like, if you put Edge, Quay, and Isaiah Simmons all together, like, that's like got to be the fastest linebacker room in the league.
Yeah.
Right? Like, by a long shot.
Well, I mean, athleticism and potential is what gets coaches killed. I mean, again, Isaiah Simmons was cut from the, or not cut, but traded away and obviously not re-signed or whatever. So, yeah, we'll see.
Then you got Isaiah McDuffie just dragging that average down.
The rhino at the end of the Stampede and Jumanji. Yeah, that's Isaiah McDuffie. Wrapping things up here, we got to talk about it. Our Lord and Savior, Mark Murphy, sadly retired. Russ Ball taking over. They did announce today, too. You know, Russ Ball.
No, Russ Ball not taking over. Ed Collison taking over.
Yeah, that's bad. That's me getting back to my conspiracy theory brain of Russ Ball potentially, you know, being that guy. Or that's what Mark Murphy would have wanted. But yes, Ed Policy taking over. Again, they did announce tonight officially that Family Night will be streamed. So Policy is the president of the people. He has never not streamed Family Night when Mark Murphy, for the most part, did and even put strikes on YouTube channels that would stream the Family Night practice, which was very, very important to not allow anyone else to watch outside of the state of Wisconsin, apparently. But yeah, I mean, it looked kind of nice. It was, you know, the last stockholder meeting. With him there, they played like a little video board, and it was funny to see, at least, I don't know, some of the things that he says. I'm like, I don't know if this guy really cares about like the culture of the Green Bay Packers and all of that. You know, it's all been about Title Town and making money, raising ticket prices every year. But when they show the little montage inside the bowl, he couldn't watch the video. You could tell he was trying not to get emotional seeing them wrap it up. And the other cool thing that I thought too is Ed Policy, when he spoke to the owners, is he didn't really talk himself up or say what he's going to do. He just talked about Mark Murphy's accomplishments and what a great president and all of that was. So I thought that was nice to see him starting things off right, one with that, and obviously the streaming of Family Night. So we'll see what happens here. Something else too, Wilde talked to Policy like a month ago when they had that first kind of meeting with them, and he brought up the ticket price thing. And Policy said that there's actually like a rule or something contractually in the NFL where other teams can complain if you don't raise your ticket prices to like keep the average up in the league. So again, that's probably just some dumbass excuse because we've raised ticket prices every year since 2010 outside of the COVID year. but I guess I'm not shocked to hear that there's some type of thing written in that you can't like lowball other teams.
Isn't that called collusion?
I don't know if you...
Hey, you guys aren't raising your prices. We're raising our prices. Everyone has to raise their prices.
Who are they colluding against? Like what... They're colluding against us, the fans, the peons. They don't give a shit about us.
I don't know if you guys have been...
But isn't that what collusion is?
I don't know if
is?
You guys have been up to speed lately about the NFL and the NFLPA, but collusion is...
All above
is
bar.
What they love. They live on collusion in the NFL. So, yeah, I don't know. But at least it's like we got some type of answer. I don't know how often they ask Mark Murphy. Well, I think they did just about every year. I know Wilde did. And he's like, oh, well, you know, every year compared to the rest of the NFL, our ticket prices are blah, blah, blah. And it's like to get an actual answer or something you can reference, it's like I or a different, you know, not the same cookie cutter one every year. It's like, oh, well, everyone else raises prices too. I thought that was interesting. So again, I'll probably end up being a curmudgeon and hating Ed Policy at some point, but so far I like the cut of his jib.
I still think that's a load of garbage because if the Packers don't raise ticket prices for 1 year, we are not anywhere close to the cheapest tickets in the league. Like,
right, right.
You to use the excuse of, oh, well, we dragged down the league average and other teams would get mad at us. Nope, I'm not buying it.
Well, delusion or collusion also has to be deceitful or secret. So I guess if they just say,
did you look up the definition just now?
Yeah, of course.
Did you ask AI or did you actually look up the definition?
I actually, well, it's not that great because it's Wikipedia, but I don't know why Wikipedia is giving me that shit. Oh, here's Merriam-Webster. A secret agreement or cooperation, especially for an illegal or deceitful purpose. So if they're just telling us, it's really not collusion. If they're like, hey, screw you guys, we're raising all the prices for sure. And if we don't, if one team doesn't, we're going to attack them.
And I don't know that it's...
If you tell us.
I don't know that it's illegal either. It's like, you know, all the gas stations. One gas station raises the price of a gallon of gas by a nickel and every other gas station on the block does the same damn thing.
So I think it actually could be, you could get in trouble for it, but they're not separate parties. It's all one league, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's like when phone services are like, we'll raise our prices by $30, you do the same, then we all keep our business.
And every phone company has unlimited plans at the same time when for years and
weird.
Years. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, either way, get back to the bullshit of it, but it's like at the same time, it's like it would be nice if we don't price Green Bay locals out of season tickets, you know, like at some point here, if you just keep raising every fucking ticket $10 a piece, that shit adds up year after year. So I know, we'll see. And have you guys seen any of the shit with the NFLPA and JC Treader?
I saw there was a lot of controversy. I don't know all the details, but I saw that Treader like stepped down or pulled himself out of the running for NFLPA president.
Yeah, so I guess we have a little bit of time here. I'm sure this is great, great for the listeners to hear. But obviously, so JC Treader, drafted by the Packers, was a center and guard for us.
Amazing.
Well, he was a pretty good player. So one part of the collusion with him was he was the top player rep for the NFL, for the NFL. But to do that, you have to be on a team. So after he was cut by the Browns and he wasn't going to resign, he was out of a job. So what he did was he got this guy, last name Lloyd, to replace him. And when he replaced him, he also created a role for Treader to be part of the, to continue to be part of the Players Association. Well, what came out is that this Lloyd guy is just a terrible dude. The whatever firm he worked at previously, there was like some type of fraud thing where it was like hundreds of millions of dollars they were sued for. Again, this is all very, I do not know the exact shit on here. So I'm speaking in general. Allegedly. I'm sure they're all listening to this. But like one of the things too is like, that Lloyd guy at the NFL office, he had like two parking spots turned into one so he could park his Porsche or whatever there. And they had it number 32 after OJ Simpson, which was very weird. I think he had
22,
potentially
yep.
Some like workplace malfeasance as well, which is why he got like let go of that firm he was originally at. So he stepped down. JC Treader also stepped down. fucking TJ Lang tweeted about it. He was like, I don't know why everyone's talking about JC.
What I was going to say is the only thing I've seen was you talking to TJ Lang on Twitter.
Yeah, I tweeted him and he tweeted me back. He's like, I've known him for 12 years. I'm like, well, that doesn't mean you're sitting in on these fucking boardroom, whatever. So the big collusion thing that was going on too outside of that is the guaranteed contracts talk in the last 5 years, especially with Deshaun Watson with the Browns, how there was a string of emails basically confirming, I forgot who it was, but there were a couple of the teams were saying, like, we're going to make sure to hold firm on not giving out guaranteed monies on this deal. I think it was something with, like, Lamar Jackson.
Was it Russ?
So that was part of it, because in that chain of emails, I think they were talking about Lamar Jackson. You know, this is when he was potentially, which was weird at the time, how there was that contract talk with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and how they weren't working it out and there weren't teams interested to sign him or trade for him when he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league, whatever. Well, it seems like it was about that guaranteed money shit, and Treader was aware of it because he was part of this one email feed with it, but he didn't give that to the players to see that they were colluding, because in that feed he said that, like, Russell Wilson's a pussy or something, and there was, like, other things in it. So he didn't want to release it to so that the players could see he was talking shit about some of the players, and it lost some guys probably tens of millions of dollars in guaranteed money and contracts, because it obviously would have shown some of that. So not very good.
I mean,
yeah,
what he said about Russ might be true, but also it just hurt
it him. Did, and of course my Packer fan brain, I was like, so if the 2014 NFC Championship game doesn't happen, does J.C. Treader not think Russell Wilson is a pussy because he was on that team, and then this collusion thing doesn't happen? You know, I don't know.
The dominoes fall.
So you're saying it's Brandon Bostic's fault.
Yes, it's Brandon Bostic's fault that Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson missed out on guaranteed money in their contracts, yes.
What if it is, though?
There's definitely a decent chance that that's
Brandon
true.
Bostic butterfly effect. We'll have to make a movie. That's insane.
With that, again, I don't. I had this written down too. I thought this was interesting. Should have talked about it when we were talking about Ed Policy. But the Packers did actually interview John Schneider for the president position before giving it to Policy, which kind of popped up again because Schneider just got a 4-year extension as GM for the Seahawks, which, if you remember, if you've been listening for a long time and you've listened to every episode, you remember every single thing I've said, Schneider had written in his contract, his last extension with the Seahawks, that he could interview for a role with the Packers if it ever popped up. And this was obviously the one that he had been thinking of, but didn't work out. He probably would have been a decent, I would have been fine. You know, I wanted Policy just because he had been the heir apparent for, since he's been in Green Bay for the last 10 years or whatever. But John Schneider is from Green Bay. Obviously grew up and, you know, worked with the Packers and everything too as a scout.
That would be cool.
That would have been cool as well. It obviously respects the culture and all that. So just found that interesting. That's all I had. I think that was good for a training camp episode. We won't be back next week, probably the week after. I will be in the state of Washington for my honeymoon. Maybe I'll watch Family Night on Saturday. I don't know when the first training or when the first preseason game is, but we'll figure that out.
August 9th, I believe.
2 weeks away.
Against August the Jets.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Because there's always that week off after the Hall of Fame game, right? Isn't that how it works? The Hall of Fame game is 2 weeks before the preseason games start.
I'm just doing math right now. It's the 31st right now.
It's the following weekend. So there's no other preseason games this weekend, but then next weekend is week one of the preseason.
That's what I guess that's what I meant. The weekends. Maybe not 2 full weeks, but because it's in the middle of the week.
Sure. Yeah, Thursday. Yeah, kicking off Thursday. Okay.
And the Wednesday.
Lions fumbled the opening kickoff of the preseason, so they're going to be shitty this year. I guess that's all I got. You guys got any? I don't have anything else. You guys got anything else?
I don't think so.
Nope.
Okay.
I'm just excited for our sweet boy Tucker Kraft.
I love him so much. We'll talk about him more the next one too, because he got like pissed off at Matt LaFleur for he was complaining about.
Did we talk about the making Rashid run?
That's
the lap?
What we'll talk about next time. I figured we were going pretty long here, okay. Anyways. But the other thing is, Matt LaFleur was talking about how he wasn't happy with, you know, the fumbles and Tucker Kraft fumbling in practice like twice. And Tucker Kraft was like, "Well, I'm not allowed to stiff arm in practice. If I could stiff arm these guys, I wouldn't be fumbling." And apparently there's a thing called a bus fine with this team, where if you throw someone on the team under the bus, you get fined. So Tucker Kraft, when they were talking about that, he was like, "That's a bus fine," saying that Matt LaFleur was throwing him under the bus. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But I'm like, yeah, if Tucker Kraft can't stiff arm a guy, like, I agree with him. He shouldn't fumble anyways, but it's like, if that were a real game.
I was going to say, the coach wins that one, yes. 100% yeah. of the time, and go, "I don't care. You can't fumble the ball."
Right. But I think it was Evan Williams too. It's like, yeah. Tucker is going to shove him into the ground if he was trying to come up and force a fumble on him. He's a little.
Why can't they stiff arm? Are people getting hurt from stiff
arm?
Well,
it's just, you know, it's training camp. You're not doing live tackling, and I think that kind of falls into contact as well.
Well, the one happened like after the play had been whistled dead, or he would have been ruled down or whatever.
Oh, so I didn't hear that.
Didn't he basically give up on the play? And then the other one was, maybe it was during the play, but it was like on the sideline. And
Yes.
And it landed out of bounds. Like, excuse the fumble, but.
A little bit better. He's been guilty of that in the past, too. That's it. I don't have anything else. You guys got anything else?
No.
Nope. Cool. All right. Well, with that, we'll see you in 2 weeks. AJ Dillon, take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy, just watch.
Anywhere I quit my job, yeah, cause it just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month, then they took my money away. Yeah, well, now I don't care. Cause they ain't working like me. Hey now, little baby, I'm going deeper down in debt. Yeah, honey, I ain't leaving here. I got a six-pack of beer and a pack of cigarettes.
Hello.
Holy
shit. Yeah, that was really loud on my end, too.
Oh, my.
Hello. Okay.
That's better.
Yeah, even before, I see it peaking a little bit.
That might have been like the most distorted. That's like when you turn on a microphone.
It turned into a block on the. Yeah, I think it was the fan. It was trying to pick up the fan audio, so everything was louder. Hello.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.